Oh, hi, audience. I didn't see you there. I didn't recognize you. Don't worry about it. Today we're doing a very hacky thing, like my terrible movie, The Room, and we're going to talk about it. In a podcast, it's called, Why Don't We Talk About the Movies We Want to Talk About? With Tommy Wiseau, I guess. Let's Talk Movies, I guess. I am Matt. I am joined by my usual host. Co-host? I think that's the word. John?
Are we both co-hosts, or are you host and co-host?
I think I'm the host, and you're the co-host. Because sometimes you're not going to be here, but I think I'm going to be a fixture, I believe.
Okay.
So, well, maybe we're both co-chief?
Well, you never hear of two co-hosts, so we'll go ahead and say you're the host.
Okay, I'll be the host, and you can be the co-host.
Hello. I'm John.
That's John.
Glad we got that out of the way after we started recording.
Very good. Yep. It's one of those things that we could not have planned for. So, anyway, we are going to be... What do you even say about this movie? I mean, it's been done to death. We're not...
Wait, have you told the listeners what movie we're...
No, I haven't. I'm just saying, like, you know.
I do know.
As my co-host, we talked at least about this part. We're going to bring the audience in on it. But, like, this movie's been probably done to death in podcasts. I haven't done research to prove... substantiate that. There's actually less movie podcasts out there than I thought, which is good.
But well, yeah, it's surprising. They may just all be video casts.
Oh, it could be too. Yeah, or like Riff Tracks wannabes and that sort of thing.
No. Well, a lot of work.
Riff Tracks actually does a riff track of this movie. That's another thing we wanted to mention.
They do.
And it's fantastic.
It is very good. It makes this movie bearable. somewhat enjoyable.
I think it's a very bearable movie to begin with, but I like bad movies. And yeah, so it does improve upon the original though somehow, which is fun. I think those guys are really cool. I don't know what their names are. Do you know any of them?
Mike Nelson,
yeah. Joel was one of them.
No, Joel was the original Mystery Science Theater 3000 guy.
But he's not on Rift Tracks, right?
No, I don't know if there was a Rift, but I just don't think they worked together. Him and Mike Nelson.
Yes, they cover it in Rift Tracks, the story of Joel from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Creation of a giant rift. Actually, I really don't know their story, but I think from what I saw in an AMA and some other things, that they just don't really work together.
Well, so the guy who does, I mean, they still do Rift Tracks, and so that's Mike Nelson, and then the characters
Bill
who
Corgan,
play.
I think.
And so he's either Crow or Tom
yeah,
Servo.
it's basically the guys who did Tom Servo and Crow.
Right.
So they're good buddies, and they riff on movies. It's fantastic. What I like to do is if I have the digital copy of the movie, I like to synchronize them. And then render it so that I can enjoy it without having to mess around with an MP3 player.
Right, yeah. Because it's always like kind of weird hearing it kind of in stereo twice between like a boombox and a TV or whatever.
Exactly. So it's much better that way. And then I even have it set to mute, to lower the volume a little bit of the film as these guys are riffing. That helps too.
Wow, that sounds like it was a lot of work, but that sounds really cool. So... anyway, the movie we're going to be talking about has been talked to death already. It's deader than its main character at the end of the story.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen The Room.
Well, you mentioned that he was dead at the end, but I looked pretty closely and I saw quite a bit of quivering.
Yeah, he was still twitching. I think
yeah,
those
like,
were...
I saw him breathing a little. He was twitching. No, it wasn't like a dead guy twitching. It was like a guy trying to be still twitching.
Well, but, I mean, that's sometimes what you look like from death spasms, is what I'm told, and there's...
Yeah, but they didn't really stumble in on him right away, either.
No, that's true. Okay.
Yeah, time for rigor mortis to set in.
I mean, okay, so I have more than a few theories about this movie, though, which actually makes sense as to why he would still possibly be alive, or seem like he's alive, and, yeah.
Oh, a fan theory.
Right, well,
Does
the one...
Does this movie even deserve a fan theory?
This movie has a million fan theories. My theory, which I haven't looked up online, I'm sure isn't original, but anyway.
Well, my favorite fan theory is that this movie is actually a dark comedy. That the fan theory was started by Tommy Wiseau himself?
I don't think so, but well, I think it's perpetuated by people saying that it's dark comedy to him, and him being like, well, yes, of course it was. That's exactly how I shot it. Everyone can see my brilliance. But he said it like
I did not mean for it to be only a drama.
But yeah, he said it a lot more.
This is bullshit.
Yugoslavian or whatever his language is.
Oh, hi, origin. Matt and John.
Oh, hi, Tommy. this movie is so often parodied. Okay, so how did this get made? Which is something I am aware of, probably the most popular movie podcast. This movie? They did. They interviewed Greg Sestero.
Oh, but did they also do a How Did This Get Made about this movie?
Well, they don't. You know, that show's called How Did This Get Made? And I don't feel like they actually go into the nuts and bolts of anything.
Well, each week, though, or each episode is a different movie.
Right, but they mostly just make fun of it.
Do an episode where they talk about this movie?
Yes.
Awesome, I'm going to listen to that.
Yeah, it's a good listen.
Actually, I'm going to stop right now and listen to it.
Yes, please go to this other podcast and listen right now. No, but they had Greg Sestero, who plays Mark. In the movie, they had him on the show, and he kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit on some of the production and kind of revealed some things about the movie that I thought were interesting.
Well, then you say pull back the curtain, but that's kind of like
a
figurative statement, because I don't even think they had a curtain.
Well, if they had a curtain, it was in the roof scene,
And it was green?
Yeah, for whatever reason. So that entire set was built in a park to reflect looking like a rooftop instead of shooting on a rooftop.
Which they had available to them.
Which is why it's confusing. So, I don't know.
So you wanted the genuine appearance of 2003's Chroma Key.
I guess. Well, yeah, as George Lucas was perpetually renovating. What's the word I'm looking for here, John? Reinventing. There we go.
Oh, there we go.
Right, as he was reinventing the blue screen, as it were, then yes, I think Tommy Wiseau was trying to follow in his footsteps. Well, I think, if more anything, he was trying to somehow substantiate the fact that he supposedly spent $6 million on this movie.
And that's the root of my fan theory.
Yeah, well, we'll get into it, hopefully. John and I both watched this, not together, but we both watched it. And as we're watching it, we had kind of some questions. So
we decided to put these questions down and not share them with each other.
Right.
Just alternate.
So now John and I are going to have to explain to the other why these things exist within this movie. And yeah, I've never seen his questions before. He hasn't seen my list of questions.
And some of these are actually subjective questions. Like, what do you think was the best or the worst or...
Yeah, I mean, some of mine are...
Some of mine are like that.
Some of mine are like that, I guess. I think. But, yeah, so... John, I'm going to let you go ahead and lead things off with your first question.
Well, this one's a softball, unless you don't want it to be. But my question was, what do you think the most one-dimensional character of the movie was?
Oh, wow.
And you have to pick one.
I'm going to say Lisa's mom. I think she's my favorite character. I think she is completely one-dimensional.
Because it sounds like she's just reading off a script. Well, that's taped to the camera.
For one thing, but also, like, every scene is about her and her problems. And, well, either her and her problems or Lisa's problems. So I guess she has more duality to her character than I realize. But every time she comes in, you know it's going to be her complaining about something. Oh, she does have a third facet, too, which is she talks about how amazing Johnny is all the time.
Why doesn't she just marry him?
Yeah, exactly. Like, if someone needs to marry Johnny, she's probably closer to his age range anyway, in terms of, like, dating age.
We both know they're pretty, both of them are pretty far from Lisa, as far as age goes.
Hard to say. No one really knows what Tommy Wiseau's age is. I couldn't find it particularly.
My guess was at least 40.
Yeah, I would say he's nearing 50 at the timing of this movie, which is back in 2003, mind you, so...
Okay.
We're coming up on 13 years this year of this movie having come out. So whatever age he is, plus 13 on the end of that.
So what was your question? Your first question.
My first question, why are Johnny and Greg best friends?
That's a good question, because they seem quite different.
Right.
Obviously, they didn't grow up together.
Yeah. In my mind, Greg's a pretty normal dude.
He is. He has some sort of construction job, I think, and Tommy's a banker. So maybe my wild guess would be Tommy helped Greg finance his home. And, well, of course, you don't know if he has a home.
Because
only see one home in the movie.
Correct. And from what I've been told outside of, like, what's told in the movie, Greg is around all the time also because he also lives in that same apartment complex.
I thought you were going to say he also lives in that apartment.
Well, I mean, for all we know.
I mean, you know, he does his monkey business in there. And he eats in there. He dances in there.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Greg comes over at one point because they only have one bed set, right?
Yeah, like, I guess there's like a loft upstairs.
Oh, wow. So the real treachery of this movie is the fact that Greg uses their bedroom, right?
Yes. Without Tommy present.
Well, yeah, it'd be pretty awkward if he was there, I guess.
One logistical thing.
It was already awkward enough to begin with, but it'd be more awkward if Tommy was there.
How'd they get that bed upstairs? Because there's only a spiral staircase.
Ooh, that's a good question. Tommy seems to have his shit together pretty well, so maybe he just
took the roof off and dropped it in.
I think he had someone build it for him up there.
Yeah, with the mattress, though.
Oh, that's a good question. There's probably a balcony and they rented a crane.
I don't know if you've ever walked on a spiral staircase. They don't wobble. They're made out of welded cast iron or steel.
I have. And I've walked up a couple spiral staircases in my
life. That one wobbled. If you watch it, there's like a pole that goes to the top, but it doesn't really mount to the ceiling. It just sits there and the thing wobbles.
Oh, wow. That's weird. Yeah. I mean, they're all very, very well grounded. I think they were... I've had less concern about walking up a spiral staircase than others in my life.
Yeah, because it's all just welded metal. It's welded steel or iron.
So. Right, exactly.
I think it's wrought iron.
Very solid construction.
Yeah. And so, they don't look that like much, but they're very solid.
I guess, I think either they must live in the same apartment or something like you're saying where...
Well, they share a love of football. We know that.
That's true. They do share a love of... Everyone in this movie shares a love of
American football. It must be like Czechoslovakian football or whatever that is where you sit in a room and...
In whichever country of origin Tommy Wiseau is from, wherein you only throw a football a maximum of like 5 feet from
the person you're standing next to. I think I saw one of these games on ESPN 8, The Ocho. It was a bunch of guys in tuxedos.
Yes.
They just stood against each other inside of a brick room, and they just kind of like underhanded the ball to each other.
But like, is it like Hot Potato, and like after when the music stops playing, someone's out, or... I don't know.
That's a good question. And then when he's out, they push him either into some garbage cans or just onto the asphalt.
That's not a funny scene, John. I was really concerned for that character when he fell into that trash can.
Okay, so if I have a friend that falls into a trash can, the first thing I do is laugh.
Laugh.
And I check to see if he's okay. But either way, I'm not helping him walk home because he just fell into a freaking trash can.
Right.
It's not like he fell from two stories onto a trash can. He just fell from
he fell from the height that he is.
Yeah, that's 5'10" into a trash can.
Not all the way. Well, I mean, even then, that would be like if he was standing where his head is and he isn't. So he fell like 2 feet onto a metal trash can.
So if anything is damaged, it's not his legs. He can walk his ass home.
If anything is damaged, it's the trash can.
And for those of you that haven't seen the movie,
spoilers, he falls in the trash can.
Mark, what's his name, Mark?
Well, he is
Greg?
Mike. He's the other character who's similar to Mark.
Yeah, well, Mark, like, just kind of, like, pushes his hand into him.
Right.
Like, oh, you're joshing me. And then Mike falls into a trash can.
Is this before or after Mark develops his really serious pot addiction? I think it's before.
Well, I don't know. I think Chris R. was indisposed at that time.
He was, yeah. They put him in the criminal
chute. Put him in jail.
Well, we'd have to talk more about that.
And also, if you haven't seen the movie, stop this podcast, watch the movie, and then you'll get all of our inside jokes.
Yeah, and like, yes, absolutely. And it's not like you're going to get anything spoiled for this movie in terms of like, oh man, it had a really good plot, and then you guys told me about this thing, and then it really ruined it for me. Like, no one watches this, by the way, for its like artistic qualities.
No.
Everyone watches it for like, oh man, listen to this crazy guy try and speak English.
So, you know, we just talked about Chris R. That kind of leads into my next question.
Sure.
What kind of drugs do you think Danny had purchased from Chris R.?
Oh, wow. I think that Danny is some type of mentally retarded, developmentally delayed, whatever you want to say. I think he has some kind of problem like in his brain. Yeah, he's got silly brain. And so I'm guessing he probably bought... unrefined sugar and thought it was cocaine or something. I don't know. I think he got...
Oh, you're saying Chris R. took advantage of him.
Right. I think so. I don't think Denny doesn't have any seeming qualities of like an actual drug addict based on any other scene in the movie.
Even though he bought powdered sugar from Chris R., Chris R. didn't get paid for it, so he still had to keep up his persona or keep his rep up. Or whatever.
Oh, Chris R.?
Well, same because that scene where he's roughing up Denny.
Yeah, because he needs his money, right? Yeah,
yeah, so. But even though it was only powdered sugar, so like he only owes him like a buck.
Well, it's still... not much of a grift. You're not really taking advantage of Denny if you give him free powdered sugar, are you?
True. And so, you don't want people... I mean, I guess Danny might recommend it to his friends, if right. he has any. And Chris R. wants to make sure he makes a good buck off of them, so he has to maintain the value by knocking Denny around when he forgets to pay.
Spoilers, Denny doesn't have any friends besides Tommy.
Well...
Debatably, who is even his friend anyway. It's
possible that Tommy was snorting a little bit of the confectionery sugar as well.
Yeah, you know what? I think maybe Tommy... the director, writer, producer of this yes. might have been, but I don't think Johnny's character is supposed to be...
But he was like, still played by a guy that was snorting a little something.
Right. Potentially.
So what's your next question?
Well, it's a curious thing to me, Johnny's entire career, his profession. How much money do you think Johnny makes?
Johnny the character?
Yes. I mean, within the confines of the movie, the main character, Johnny, how much do you think he makes based on all the circumstances that are happening within the movie?
I'll be honest. I think he's like one step above teller, like bank teller. I think he's like the guy that sits at the desk and when you want to open an account and, you know, put your $300 into it, he's there. I'm guessing he probably makes like $30,000 plus commission, which would be hard for him to afford a house that looks like the house on the outside. But it's more than enough to afford the house that looks like his on the inside, because it's basically a two-room apartment.
Right, but think about a few things within this movie, right? There's a part wherein Lisa's mom comes in, and she's mad that Johnny didn't help her friend.
That's true.
In putting down money for her house to a sum of what figure?
$60,000?
I think $30,000. I think she says $30,000.
Maybe here's something I just thought of. What if she meant try to qualify her for a loan that didn't require a down payment, and he dropped the ball at the bank?
Could be.
But she did say, your boyfriend has money, why won't he help my friend?
Right. Well.
So, maybe not.
Yeah.
That would have been a good angle, though.
I thought there was a specific number that she was saying, and that Johnny was being kind of stingy. It was only $30,000.
Have you ever heard of anyone, aside from a family member, helping someone else with a down payment?
And to the sum of $30,000.
And it's not even your friend, it's just a friend of a friend?
The answer is no. Yes. Not me, at least. If you're listening to this podcast and you can say yes to that, then...
Leave a comment.
Yes, leave a comment.
And also, and I'm going to refinance my house, so...
Right, yeah. Who is this friend and what? Tell him to get in in communication with us. Another thing, too, Johnny seems to be paying for Denny's college.
That's true. And that is expensive. And even back in 2003.
And he's paying for his apartment.
Yeah.
So I doubt he makes $30,000.
No, but he certainly acts like... What, he didn't say much about his job at the bank. But he said a few things that are very suspicious. Made me think that he doesn't make that much money.
Okay.
Like, we're about to get a big client. And then... I mean, that could really mean anything. Usually right. bankers' salaries don't directly correspond with... clients that walk in the door.
But he also says they're using my ideas and they're saving a lot of money. So like what ideas does he have as the guy above being a teller? That's like, why I think
when the old teller used to throw out every other $5 bill and Tommy's idea was like maybe let's save yes, most of them.
He would fleece the company. He'd be like 20 for you, 20 for me, and he'd stuff it in. Yeah, like
and Tommy was a whistleblower and said this is a bad idea. They fire the guy and no one's stealing from the company anymore. But now Tommy's not getting any kickback.
Right.
Maybe that's what he was thinking.
You know what? In as much as this movie doesn't make any sense, I guess I could buy into that. I can believe it. Yeah. What's your next question?
Do you think that Tommy Wiseau had only wonderful, satisfying relationships with women before writing and directing The Room?
Based on the story that he tells of how he met Lisa and how interesting that story was. And do you remember this scene at all?
Oh, let me think here. I remember him telling the story.
Well, it's Greg or the therapist. One of the characters says, well, you know, how did you meet Lisa? And he goes, oh, that's actually a very interesting story. So I came to this country and I have a $2,000 check, but I end up saying it's at the YMCA. I can't cash it. I was, oh, yeah, why is that? Oh, it was an out-of-state check.
Out-of-country check.
Yeah,
I've never heard of a bank that won't cash the check. They just might make you wait for a while before giving you the funds.
Right. Unless it's like you're from a foreign country and you don't speak English.
You're from Czechoslovakia. You don't have before any, the fall of the Iron Curtain.
You don't have any ID. You're secretly D.B. Cooper.
I don't think he was quite forthright. And for being a banker, you think that he would tell the story correctly.
Well, and I guess...
And I love how they brought that up. Like, his buddy said, well, why couldn't you cash it? Oh, it was an out-of-state check. Like, that's a really weird detail to put into a movie for it to never occur.
That's not good script writing. If you're out there working on your screenplay and you have a whole scene about, like, how this person signed a lease for their apartment, yada, yada.
That's really mundane.
What it leads to, though, is that the fact he meets Lisa at a coffee shop. And they strike up a conversation. And I think that's the end of the story. There's not much else to it. So it seems like he's kind of a cliche, typical romantic.
Yeah.
Which means, like, I don't know, he's probably done okay, but by those same terms, he's not, like, passionate or creative or anything. So I think that he's probably struck out with women in the past. And I think maybe based on some of the, like, subtle anti-woman stuff in this movie that, like... Maybe he has run into someone cheating on him in the past.
You know what? I like to take a step further. I think that he either, you know, smacked his lady around a little bit or was accused of that and is maintaining that he never did it. And that's part of why he made this movie.
Well, but then you would expect that the character Johnny and him, Tommy Wiseau, would be almost identical characters. And the name Johnny would be almost identical to the name Tommy. But, I mean, I'm being facetious because those things are absolutely facts. Like, Tommy Wiseau looks exactly like Tommy Wiseau in this movie. It has a character whose name is Johnny and doesn't have a last name, so much so that I really call him Tommy when I'm referring to him almost more than I call him Johnny by accident. Like, he's obviously playing an autobiographical character.
You know what I bet? I bet they did show this movie to a focus group in its original form. And they had a long laundry list of things that they wanted changed or wanted to have changed. But the only thing that he went with was, Mr. Wiseau, you should probably remove the scene of you beating the shit out of Lisa.
So you
wouldn't that make a lot more sense, though?
You think an actual scene exists wherein Tommy did actually hit her?
Absolutely. And then he's in denial. I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit.
Well,
oh, hi, Mark.
Even in that case, like, I kind of side with Tommy a little bit in that he doesn't drink. And maybe he doesn't drink for a reason. Like... Maybe his family has a history of being violent and abusive drunks, and she kind of, like, goads him into it the entire time and is like, oh, come on, just have a drink, have fun. You know that it's going to make you beat me, but go ahead and take a few drinks anyway.
Have some of this delicious vodka and cognac.
Right.
Or vodka and scotch.
Whatever the case.
Which you may not know this, but that is a horrible combination of drinks.
Yeah, I don't drink myself, so I'm sure. It sounds as bad as the pizza that Lisa orders. I don't remember what it is specifically. That's some really gross ingredients.
It's on like it. Pineapple and ham and something else, right?
And then, like, on one side, it's like...
tomato slices.
Potatoes au jus. I don't have no idea. That's not a thing. Au gratin.
Potatoes gratin.
Yeah, no. Potatoes covered in gravy on pizza. That's what I mean.
Actually sounds pretty good.
All right. Are you ready for my question number three?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Do you find the fact that Johnny works at a bank believable based on his character's appearance in the movie being set in 2003?
No. Every bank I've been to has had clean-cut employees, very professional. Like, he dressed professionally, although he wore really, like, baggy clothing, which was kind of like a late 90s thing, fad that was dying out.
Well, it looks he wore the clothing of a man who just lost 40 pounds,
yeah,
but couldn't afford to buy any new clothes.
Plus, he had the pleated pants, and they were like giant. You could argue that he dressed like a banker at that time, but the long black hair, there's no way that he would work at a bank.
What do you? Well, I mean, this is a follow-up question. It's not one of my official ones, so I'm sorry you're getting a two-parter here. What kind of job does it look like he probably does do? What do you think his career would be?
Oh, like a Czechoslovakian soap opera star?
I was going to go with something like Chris R. That's what I'm thinking.
A drug dealer.
Yeah, that's kind of what the appearance of his character.
Because he's a pretty muscly guy.
He is. He's like very vascularly muscular.
Yeah. So like possibly a steroid user. Not someone you'd really want to mess around with because, you know, he could probably pack a pounding.
Yeah, I don't want to say too many bad things about him because he looks like he could kick my ass. I don't know. He's kind of scary.
Yeah, the worst part about it is taking him to court. Because, you know, he would just be saying, I did not hit him. I did not hit him. This is bullshit. It's not true.
Oh, hi, Judge.
Oh, hi, Your Honor.
Oh, hi, Your Honor.
Oh, hi, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. Oh, hi, stenographer.
Oh, hi, Lisa.
Oh, hi, jury.
Oh, no. She's on the jury. What a twist.
I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know him. Well, that shouldn't disqualify me.
Okay, so point case, though, not a banker.
Not a banker. But then again, I mean, Lisa stays at home all the time, so he could have any career, and she would never know what he does. True. I guess, though, he could be doing, like, security at a strip club.
I never thought about that. Like, yeah, Lisa never leaves the apartment, really. I think there's one scene when she's not in the apartment. It's because she's at her friend's apartment, which I assume is in the same apartment building. And then she goes back to, because it seems like everyone in this movie, like, lives within 10 feet of each other.
No kidding.
Based on the amount that they just drop by the apartment and almost for no reason, and then like are like, well, if he's not here, I guess I'll leave.
You ready for my question?
Sure.
Did you have a hard time remembering what city the room was set in?
I honestly didn't think about it at all from the time that I see Johnny Wiseau being shot. Johnny Wiseau. Johnny.
This portmanteau.
Johnny being shot. In the openings, in the opening scenes, riding a trolley, I otherwise don't really think that much about it. But there's so much B footage of like the Golden Gate Bridge, and
there's so much B reel of the same shot of the Golden Gate Bridge, and then one time you go the other way, you go left to right, then right to left.
Yeah, so I mean,
like, why not like the Trans Union Center, whatever that pointy building is?
Because in
but not Alcatraz.
Because in cinematography, that sort of thing is called an establishing shot.
Yeah, we only do it like once.
But you're usually setting it up for different scenes every time that you are using
true.
One.
So does he live on the Golden Gate Bridge?
The apartment complex might be on the Golden Gate Bridge. Because otherwise, exactly, if you shot some like historic San Franciscan kind of like famous historical sites, you would expect then the next scene is going to take place in one of those or something, or there was a reason to do so. So there's not really a reason for him to use all these establishing shots of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Or if you do a shot of the Golden Gate Bridge, that's like what you do once at the beginning of the movie. Then you're in San Francisco. If you ever leave San Francisco in the movie, and then you come back, you might do another shot of something that would identify it.
Well,
don't do it before every other scene.
Let me rebut your question and ask you one. Is it significant to the plot at all that they're in San Francisco?
No.
Yeah, there's no payout to them.
They might as well just set it in L.A. since that's where the sound studio was.
Right.
Or the sound stage.
There's no benefit at all to them being like, oh, this is in San Francisco. There's no payout.
Unless he lived in San Francisco.
I think he might have. I mean, based on what you were saying with Greg and how he was giving away, he actually gave away Tommy's street that he lived on in a scene where he talks about domestic
woman
violence. Yeah. But and just, Tommy laughs it off.
Yeah.
Johnny. Yeah, right. So, I mean, there's not really any payout to the fact that they're in San Francisco, though.
No.
All right, are we ready for... Are you ready for
number four? You know, 90% of the movie, they're not in San Francisco, too.
Well, who knows?
They're on a soundstage in L.A.
Right, but that's my point, though. It's a movie called The Room, and they're in two different rooms of an apartment. So you could have shot this literally anywhere. The establishing shots do nothing for this movie.
All right, what was your question?
Number four. Do you find Lisa to be either sexy or beautiful?
There was a point, like maybe the first 5 minutes of the movie, I think, well, okay. And then she like started opening her mouth, and then...
Right, does it help that she had like less than 10 lines before she took her shirt off?
That helped me not realize that she is not sexy nor beautiful. But that didn't help me realize that she isn't. And then I learned quite quickly that, first of all, she's dating a guy like Tommy. Johnny.
Not faithfully.
And second of all, she's a horrible person. Just completely terrible. Doesn't care about her mother's sickness. Doesn't care about her boyfriend, husband-to-be, whatever. Doesn't really care about anyone but herself. So I do not find her sexy nor beautiful.
So you referred me to a YouTube poop of this, and I've seen it myself before. But the funniest thing that I think Lisa maybe has the funniest line in the entire movie, which is when Chris R comes and she's like giving him crap about taking drugs. She's like, "What kind of drugs do you take?" But then she also says, "What kind of money? What is that like? What does that mean? American dollars?"
I guess you could say, well,
what amount of money or how much money would be better question? Yeah,
how much money? People say that sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I owe some money to my drug lord. Well, and then what kind of money? A couple hundred thousand.
Maybe if it's like a West Coast thing, because we're obviously not, we're in one of the flyover states. We're not East or West Coast. But yeah, I mean, here we would definitely say, how much money?
Yeah.
Right. So to me, at least, the line is, what kind of money? Debt? Or, yeah, maybe. Something. I don't know. What kind of money, though? Sounds a little funny to me.
Yeah, is it yen? Is it euro?
So,
Czechoslovakian marks?
As soon as you can see how selfish Lisa is when her mom is like, "I have cancer," and she's like, "Don't worry about it," then you realize super attractive.
No, she's not. But she was a up-and-coming starlet who never got anywhere.
Are you talking about her character in this movie?
No, I think her in her life.
I think she is probably the most one-dimensional character, honestly, because we don't know anything about her. She has nothing going on in the story other than she is engaged to Johnny and she's trying to cheat on him constantly.
Now, there actually was a actress in the movie that made it somewhat successfully, and that would have been the girlfriend of Mike.
Okay.
Yeah, it was feeding her chocolate.
I forget what her character's name, Jenny or something. I forget what her character's name is, but it's not really important.
But she gave an interview about how having starred in the room is kind of embarrassing, but she just goes with it because it's funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, Cameron Diaz did some embarrassing things before she started acting.
Like what?
Nothing I've ever seen, but I've heard a few things.
Really?
Yeah, there's some science out there on the internet about Cameron Diaz.
She did some adult movies?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
Well, we're going to go to break here and... just kidding.
Both hands on your microphone, John.
Got it. My question for you is next, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting that you brought up Lisa's mother because my question is about her. Did you, as an audience member, care about the fact that Lisa's mother definitely had breast cancer?
I definitely have never wished breast cancer on a character more in my life.
Not that you've ever wished breast cancer on anyone.
No, I mean, but as a fictitious character, Lisa's mom is like so... she's so nagging and terrible. There's maybe some people in my life I could honestly compare her to, and I'm not going to, but... Those are the kinds of people I don't like to be around either. And yeah, so she's just perpetually negative. She has nothing good to say. This is
very materialistic too.
Oh, extremely. So, I mean, like every time she's saying, well, you know, you should stay with Johnny. He makes a lot of money.
That's everything that's wrong with that generation.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, not everyone in that generation. I don't want to speak for everyone, but there was a common theme where people would marry others because they saw them as being their meal ticket.
Right. I mean, at least that was the idea of an attractive person, was someone who made enough money to support you more so than
you didn't
than
have
like,
to work. And know, she didn't really look like she had to do a lot of work in her life other than acting in terrible movies at a late age.
And smoking a lot of menthol cigarettes. I don't know. She looked really, I don't know how old she was, but she looked like an old leather glove. I don't know.
True. So what do you have for me? Number five.
For number five, I have a multiple choice question.
Okay.
The Room is A, a misunderstood masterpiece. B, the story of a girl with agoraphobia. C, a spiritual sequel of the movie and play The Producers. D, a porno shot in reverse. Or E, a money laundering scheme gone awry.
I say equal parts D and E.
I see parts of B and C in there.
True.
Too, but yeah.
Agoraphobia, definitely.
Right. What is Lisa's problem?
Why can't she work? She seems healthy and young. Well, she can have a job.
She was raised by that mother, first of all.
Oh. Well, how's that working out for her? Answer. Not so well.
I don't know, man. Like, she just seems to stay home all day and order pizza. So, like...
It's true.
There are worse things to do in life, realistically.
Maintain that super fit figure.
I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any exercise equipment in that apartment, and she refuses to leave the apartment. I think there's one scene where she isn't in the apartment. It's because she's in someone else's apartment.
She got there by a tunnel.
So yeah, somehow they came and put her in like a parrot's cage and threw like a blanket over her and transported her or something. But yeah, I don't know. So, but parts D and E, you said. So, a porno shot in reverse. So explain why you feel like that's a viable answer.
Well, I think it's a viable answer because... I guess
take out the part where Johnny shoots himself in the mouth.
Okay, or it could be... Yeah, let's take that part out. But it seems like it's a lot of build-up if you look at it in reverse, because the movie starts out with one sex scene followed by another one 20 minutes later, and they're both pretty explicit. So it seems like if you put it in reverse, you would have a lot of drama.
I think even the third one with Greg happens within like the first 30 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, this is like a softcore porn, like an HBO After Dark
right. In
reverse.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, in regular sequence, if you put this movie in reverse. But yeah, there's a lot of really terrible acting, quote-unquote attractive people, but like obviously like B-list softcore porn stars.
Right.
And really awkward, like, thrusting.
Well, there's a scarcity of acting talent for certain. There is a very poorly crafted script with a lot of plot holes, I think.
Yes.
A lot of unanswered questions that no one cares about addressing.
Terrible, terrible music during the sex scenes.
Yeah. I mean, kind of a terrible score underneath this whole movie, really.
Not to mention Tommy and Lisa's terrible scores in the movie.
Oh.
Being each other.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, Lisa. Like, they both scored with Lisa.
No, you'll ask that, too. Yeah. So, yeah. Equal parts D and E. And the reason I say E is because, well, should I get into my theory yet?
Absolutely.
And this is my independent theory, is that the movie was a way for Mr. Tommy Wiseau, but theoretically, it could have been a vessel for somebody to launder a lot of money, because the actual costs for making this movie, being $6 million, are in no way reflected in the final product of the movie. And he claims he had hired 400 people work on this movie throughout the course of filming. I don't buy it. I wasn't there, and I'm sure I could be wrong, but something is not right.
He did hire 400 people. He hired 8 people to act in the film, 10 people, you know, to build the set, 2 people to write it, and let's see, 380 people to move cocaine across the border.
It's true, though. Basically, I don't know a whole lot about the film industry, but it seems to be of no better quality than a single episode of a soap opera. And I imagine it would only take a few a few hundred thousand dollars to make that exact quality movie. I know that he did some stupid things like buying cameras. He bought 2 cameras, one film, one digital, instead of renting them, which everyone does in that business, apparently. And a lot of other mistakes were made. Also, I could see this guy not wanting to relinquish control to anyone, including people that could save him money. So I could see them easily wasting $1 or $2 million. But six?
Yeah, six is a lot. Six is a lot of money.
That's more money than like most people earn in their lifetime times 5.
I don't think it goes to like the acting staff. Like I think the highest billed person in this movie is probably Greg Sestero, maybe. Like,
yeah, he probably made like what, $40,000?
First on the call sheet, right, and maybe that. I don't even know, so...
Well, Greg Sestero also wore a lot of hats during that production, too.
He was also the line producer, of which he'd never been a line producer before. And that's something that he says on How Did This Get Made. And also, so he and Tommy are actually buddies from an acting school that he's going to, and they become acting partners. And so that's how Greg knows Mark in real life. But I don't, Greg knows Tommy. I think Greg knows Mark because he plays that character in the movie. But yeah, so I don't know. This movie's just, it's wrapped in mystery for me. You said you thought there's maybe a deleted scene wherein Tommy actually does hit Lisa.
Yeah.
I think if there's a deleted scene in this movie, it's the end where Denny wakes up from like some kind of heroin induced nightmare where it started out really nice because I think that Tommy isn't actually, or Johnny isn't an actual real character, because how could he be?
He's like some bastardization of his real neighbor.
Well, no, I think that Johnny is the idealized self of Denny. Like, he's who Denny wants to be.
Is that the id? Is that the superego?
I think that's maybe the, it's one of those two. Let's say it's
there's also the ego.
I think the id is what you are, and then, like, there's the superego. Well, no.
I guess the superego is the one that you want to be? I can't remember.
I don't know. It's all a big iceberg analogy.
It's one of those three.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not that Freudian psychology is relevant in this day and age. But
nope. But anyway, so I think Denny's perceived self wants to be something like Johnny. Or maybe you're right. Maybe it is like those are his actual neighbors or something like that. And so he's in his, you know, hallucinogenic state, his drug state, he really wants that character to die so he can be with Lisa. So he's projecting like this kind of weird fantasy of these kind of Lemony Snicket's unfortunate series of events to happen to this character so that he ends up killing himself in the end.
I see.
I don't know. I just don't. Well, so I think the only real scene is Chris R. Battling with Denny. And that's when things got a little too real for him. So that's why Johnny and Mark come up and
defend them all.
Yeah, and then they do something that, in my mind, makes no sense at all for a few reasons. They're only gone for, like, maybe 2 minutes, would you say, it was in that part of the movie, right?
Yeah, 90 seconds.
And what they do is they take Chris R., and they take his gun, and they, both holding an arm behind his back, take Chris R. to the police station.
Which is also in their building, I guess.
It must be really close. They must live right next to the police station, which, like, if I'm Chris R., it's a very dangerous place to be dealing drugs. It's a very bold choice to be...
But it probably pays pretty well.
Yeah.
When your customers actually pay you.
True. Yeah. I mean, Denny couldn't pay him, apparently, or whatever kind of money he owed him. American... Maybe he owns... What kind of money? German francs. I don't know. But then also, like, what would happen... So let's say someone comes into the podcast studio right now, right, and starts assaulting you, just starts punching you in the face, right? So then I come to your rescue, and we both, you know, subdue this guy and then walk him down to the police station. What happens then?
Well, when we get to the police station?
Yeah.
Gosh, we have to wait, probably. Then someone has to come, and the desk sergeant might cuff him. But then we have to, like... tell them what happened, and we both have to make sure our stories line up, because they're not going to take just two guys' random opinion unless there's some sort of evidence.
Right.
So they would probably want to bring Danny in, too, and ask for what happened, and then they would probably want to bring in
Dennis?
Lisa. Yeah. And bring in Lisa, and bring in her mom. You just don't drop someone off, like, I don't know, like at the book depository at a library.
Right, yeah, I don't think you can... Well, that's certainly not the criminal...
You log process. Into your criminal account later to see if they got checked in.
Yeah, exactly. So you go home and check citizensarrest.com or whatever.
Yeah, make no, sure. You're going to be there for a few hours.
Even and then that's if they even decide to be like, oh, okay.
Press so charges, yeah.
I guess we totally believe your story about how he was selling drugs that he doesn't appear to have on them.
Yeah.
And that he was waving this gun around, which you guys had in your possession by the time you got here, not him. So
well, I guess as a district attorney might need to get involved as well, or like an associate district attorney to maybe see if any charges could be pressed. Because they'd be violating this guy's rights if they held him without him actually committing.
Well, here's one thing I know for sure. So Mark definitely has a cell phone because they call Mark like 3 or 4 times in this movie.
And the YouTube poop, she called him like 5 or 6 times.
The best line, in my opinion, in the entire movie is right after. What is it? I don't remember when it happened specifically. So like they're all hanging out as a group, and then the next scene is Lisa calling Mark, and he goes, and she's all like, oh, Mark, I miss you. I haven't seen you. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? I just saw you. He says it like she's the most annoying person to him in the entire world, which by this point, maybe she is. So that's maybe my favorite line. There's a great The Room storyboard out there for anyone who's, I mean, not storyboard. What am I talking about?
Message board?
I mean, I'm sure there's a thousand The Room story or message boards. Soundboard.
Oh,
yeah, there's a fantastic The Room soundboard out there. It's one of Mark's sound bits is, what are you talking about? I just saw you. You'll have to check that out. All right, you had another question for me, I think?
Yeah, question number 6. So, how's your sex life?
You're just asking casually because that's the kind of thing that friends just ask each other casually?
Well, I didn't realize that until I saw the room, but apparently I've been missing out on a lot of juicy details.
Yeah, I mean,
from my buddies.
I'm trying to think how Mark answers it within the movie. I think he kind of like answers it a little bit dodgingly.
Well, I don't think he goes into any detail, but I think he says he's not getting any here.
Oh, that's right. So he's like, I'm just striking out, man. I don't know. I would say my sex life is like, my bowel movement habits now because I've been eating a lot more fiber. Yeah, regular.
That's all I needed. Actually, that's way more than I ever wanted to know. I know we're very good friends, but that is just not what you ask your buddies.
No.
Especially when you become like late 20s, early 30s.
And especially not in a social, like a public setting of like a small bakery.
Well, a small bakery where you just get your coffee and snacks for free. Did you notice that? Hi, what can we get you? Oh, I'll have a hot chicken. Okay, sit down. We'll bring it to you.
And they never pay for it?
They never pay for it.
No. Wow, that's crazy because this movie otherwise definitely goes through that entire process. Like when he goes to the flower shop. Remember that scene where he's like, I'll take a dozen red roses.
First of all, I thought he said 1,000 because of his beautiful accent.
I'll take 10,000 red roses.
Hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you.
I didn't know it was you.
Did you see this Frankenstein-looking man with long black hair
and Oakley's,
thick Eastern European accent?
But because he's wearing a pair of, yes, Oakley sunglasses, or generic Oakley's, like, oh, I couldn't see you behind those. Even though you're wearing your usual complete floor-length trench coat and, like, yeah, 2-foot Trent Reznor hair.
Think about it. He could have used, anyone could use a movie as a way to lose money, so to speak. You could buy a bunch of props that never make it to the set, but you put them in your house.
That's,
and they'd be furniture.
I think that's the entire idea of The Producers. Have you ever seen The Producers?
I have not. Is that what it is? They milk a movie budget to...
So it's the screenwriter who keeps writing flops.
Yeah.
Or a playwright who keeps writing all these flops. And then his buddy, who's like basically an auditor or financial person, who's like, you know, you could make a lot more money making a really bad screenplay or like a really bad play than one that was successful. You just have to get a lot of investors, put a lot of money in it, and then make a way for the money to disappear. So that's literally, it's a fantastic movie. The version with, it came out a few years ago.
That's what you were saying.
Was,
you could have been like The Producers. You could have used it as like a
way
to launder,
technically,
not launder money.
Technically, but questions or answers C and E are pretty close to being the same thing in that.
Yeah.
But
I mean, there's a difference between money laundering and him just evading taxes, but he could have made a lot of money on one business and then invested in another business.
Right.
With the intention of losing money, but being able to buy some stuff for himself in the meantime.
And actually, the movie version of The Producers, I think it's a Mel Brooks written play originally, or something like that.
I love Mel Brooks.
And so it's got Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick and Will Ferrell. And it's actually really, really funny. I think, like, a lot of people say the original is better done. But I think this one's still really well done. We should watch that also. Let's
watch them both.
Whatever, man. Whatever's clever. But, yeah, I guess I still had one more question for you, at least.
All right.
It's not how's your sex life, because there was, yeah, we've gotten through that awkwardness. If you had to make a sequel, which character would you follow, and what would it be about?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, do I want to make money, or do I want to follow in the spirit of the room? Because I think those two ideas are mutually exclusive.
You can go either direction, because this could either be a passion project for you, which is like obviously what The Room probably was for Tommy Wiseau, without him now being like, oh, it's a dark comedy that's, you know, parody and really terrible. But at the time, I think it was him being like, I'm going to put my best foot forward as a director and writer and make a serious movie. But you could go with it being like a passion project, like The Room, I think, originally was. Or you could just be like, yeah, I'm going to make a successful movie, or try to make a successful sequel off of this stuff I've got going right now.
I think you're going to have to come up with a way for maybe Chris R. will do a little time in prison for a crime that he was had allegedly committed. There were really no great witnesses, not much evidence, but he spent some time in prison, maybe on a gun charge, because that's all they can get him for.
So it's a prison drama?
No, he gets out of prison and he's pissed.
Okay.
So he goes to find Tommy. Turns out Tommy's already dead. So then he goes to get Greg, kills Greg. And then he goes and finds Lisa, kills her. Lisa's mom's already dead from stage 4 breast cancer. Then he goes and digs up Tommy's grave and desecrates his body. And then he goes and finds Denny and gets his money and then kills Denny. That's probably the best movie you can make.
I'm trying to think, like, that kind of makes me think of those movies you love with the two Irish brothers who kill people.
I don't love the movies. I like the first one, the Boondock Sorry, Saints. The,
yeah, okay. So you like
the second one, All Saints Day, was a hot pile of shit.
Oh, really?
And then coming back to watching the first one, I'm realizing that there are a lot of elements of the first one that are a steaming pile of shit as well, but it's an entertaining movie.
You just had a better taste for shit back in the day.
I did. It's a phenomenal action movie. If that's what you walk into it expecting, you're not going to be disappointed, gotcha. But some of the writing is
pretty bad. I think the sequel that needs to be made follows Lisa's mom and her having to deal with Lisa moving back in with her and her friend that
baggage,
her friend who couldn't get her own house moving in with her. And it becomes a lot like Golden Girls probably for a while.
Yeah, because Lisa's damaged goods, so she's probably not going to date for a long time. Also, no one will have her.
Right. So it kind of like takes on a Golden Girls kind of funny sitcom feel for a little while. Then you follow her to all of her like oncology appointments and her breast cancer is getting more and more aggressive. She goes through chemotherapy, and at the end of the movie, she dies of breast cancer.
Just so you know, there's nothing funny about breast cancer.
There's not.
But there's plenty funny about this character getting breast cancer because she's a horrible person.
Right. I think everyone...
If anyone deserved it, it'd be her.
I would be okay with almost any of the characters from The Room, maybe save Johnny and honestly Mark, because I think Mark just kind of like was put into a bad situation. And probably could have done better to avoid it, but I mean, I think there's also...
Well, we all saw who he slept with. Yes, he could have done better.
But yeah, like, here's the thing. In my opinion, Mark is kind of a saint because he's hanging out with Denny, who's probably somewhat mentally retarded. Tommy, who's so English as a second language, he's like hanging out with a person who's developmentally delayed. Like, so he's dealing with like a lot of language barriers, intelligence barriers. He seems to be like that charitable person who hangs out with a class of people that's like knowingly beneath him. So,
which is pretty low, Mark.
Right. So, I feel bad for Mark to a degree, and Denny. I don't know. I don't know enough about Denny to really hate him. But I also don't like him. I think he's definitely creepy.
He's creepy.
And I would definitely be okay if he got some kind of cancer also. Yeah.
Nothing against him for being slow, but he's creepy.
He is really creepy.
But the funny thing was, though, is the actor was never told that he was playing somebody with a mental retardation.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Yes.
That's amazing. Because he does such a good job without any prior knowledge then.
I know.
So,
which if I was that actor, I would never admit to that.
I don't want him to have any kind of cancer because he's developmentally delayed either.
So you know, we don't want the actors and actresses to get this cancer.
Nope,
we
I'm
just
talking
want the characters.
Strictly the characters in the confines of this movie. And I'm okay with him getting cancer for literally the first 5 minutes where
he dies.
There's some innuendo and some subtlety, but basically the scene goes down like this. Johnny and Lisa are hanging out. Lisa just put on a new dress that Johnny got her because, you know, him and her are looking to take things upstairs. And so he kind of almost implicitly says to Denny, hey, Denny, how are you? And then is also like, hey, me and Lisa are going to go upstairs to have sex. And then Denny is like, but can I watch? And he's like, you know, Denny, that's a really weird thing to say. And, you know, like, two is great, but three is a crowd. So, like, you should leave. We're going to go have sex. And then Denny goes upstairs and jumps on the bed while they're kind of, like, getting into foreplay anyway.
And just so the listeners thought, it sounds like you're describing the beginning of The Room.
That is the beginning of The Room. Yeah.
I thought you were talking about your alternative.
No, this isn't my sequel. This is the first 5 minutes of that movie, yes. And why I'm okay with that character.
Oh, I got
getting
you.
Some type of cancer. He can, I would say, I want him to go through chemo successfully and live a happy life afterward. But that scene in specific just creeped me out.
It's so weird, and it's such a weird scene to drop on somebody as we have not really established at this point who Denny is.
Well, and then it goes back
and
to
Tommy,
like,
and Lisa.
If okay, so imagine this was running on HBO at 3 o'clock in the morning too, and you're like, The Room. Oh, okay, it's rated mature. I guess I'll watch it, right? And so you start watching this movie. You miss the part, I guess. You go to the kitchen to make some popcorn while they're saying this movie is rated, you know, MA for mild nudity,
mild
drugs references, suicide, whatever, blah blah blah.
I don't know what's more explicit, by the way, her boobies or his man ass.
Yeah.
Thrusting as he's having sex with
her. I can
tell
you that neither one of them did anything for me. So I guess they're both equally offensive.
I mean, just watching him have sex with her navel was not attractive.
Oh. So another reason why I think this is Denny's heroin nightmare is because there's inexplicably a spoon on the wall. And something that people do at theaters. Have you heard about this?
They throw plastic spoons
at the screen every time they see what's not a spoon framed on the wall, a picture of a spoon that's framed on the wall.
Like when you go to the store and buy a picture frame, it looks like one of the stock photos.
It probably was a stock, like some stock photography, but it's just a picture of a spoon, and it's like so inexplicable and like almost out of place, even though this movie itself is out of place. And
if you hire a set designer, you don't have issues like that. The set designer's like, hey, you guys, get together. Photographer, take a picture of them. That picture's going in the picture frame.
Right.
Because we pay attention to detail. That's what our job is. But when Tommy Wiseau's running the set, things that's like why you get a picture of a spoon.
A picture of a spoon goes in the wall.
But that's interesting you bring that up, because a lot of heroin users, they use a spoon to cook
correct.
Their heroin.
Yeah, exactly. So I think maybe that's Denny, then, is...
This
there's some
theory.
Subtle imagery going on in the backgrounds that suggests that Denny is on some kind of, like, drug high.
But look at the very end of the movie. Who took it the worst that Tommy had killed himself?
I think Denny.
Arguably, I think it's Denny.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
Which they took it the hardest.
Right, but that's the thing, though, is that a drug high also eventually runs out. So you're talking
yeah, so
about...
he's crashing.
Right, so the beginning of the movie is him, and the movie is all feel good and everything.
Yeah, like he's about to watch his friend and his girlfriend have sex.
And he follows his ideal self, Johnny,
a creepy self,
through this series of events that are all becoming, you know, kind of progressively chipping away at like a good situation for Johnny until something that's terrible where he kills himself at the end follows kind of like the tone of a drug high.
But how is the heroin responsible for Elisa cheating on him, though? Or is it just like saying that if you were a heroin addict and people in your life start to fall away and not be attracted to you as much anymore?
Maybe. Well, the only thing that doesn't make any sense about me is because I think that what is probably still true of Denny is that he has a big crush on Lisa, who might be like maybe his, like next door neighbor or something.
So that his other self is cheating on her as via Mark.
Right. I don't think Mark is a real character either. Okay. So, yeah, exactly. It's kind of a couple different ways for him to vicariously.
Tommy's the wild guy who lets his hair down, who has the great girlfriend, but then.
What can be said about Greg? Greg's just a very normal, vanilla character. The most interesting thing that happens to Mark's character and his progression through the story is that he shaves his beard. That's my
That's
opinion.
True. And the scene where he walks in and you see his beard is akin to a scene where like he sees his wife-to-be in a wedding dress for the first time. It's like you hear the angels singing and they have this light spotlight on his face.
Yeah, it's a very...
And then I realized, wait, they're just showing Mark because he shaved his
It's very weird and a natural scene, and it's really just so that Tommy can call him Babyface or something. It's like,
yeah, there was really absolutely no reason
Hey, Mark, you look like a babyface.
My guess is Mark might have needed... Or, what's his name, Kevin?
Who?
The actor?
Greg Sestero.
Greg. Maybe Greg had an interview.
No, specifically Greg was told to shave. And I think it was so Mark could call him a babyface, because otherwise I think Tommy's fear is that Johnny becomes a less likable character in comparison to Mark, who is more masculine.
Okay, now, and I'm not I'm fairly straight, I would say. Very straight, but I would
rate
say
yourself,
that Mark...
Rate yourself on the Kinsey scale.
2. So, I would say that Mark looks much, much more handsome after he shaves his face, so that kind of works to Tommy Wiseau's detriment there.
I don't know. Me being a 2.5 on the Kinsey scale, I kind of like the ruggedness of Mark before he shaves his beard. So
but he has a good face for shaving.
He does. So.
I mean, he looked good.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
He definitely didn't look worse, and I don't think he looked like a baby face at all, because he was pretty angular.
No, he looked alternatively okay. You could never say that he looked worse, but I think you could make the preference of whether he looks better.
Lateral move,
whether
as
without,
far as...
Yeah, exactly. Whether without a beard.
So, I don't really know what Tommy Wiseau had intended for that scene to do.
If I'm going to cheat on my wife with Mark, I would prefer the Mark with a beard... To the Mark that doesn't have a beard. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. 2.5, you say?
I'm talking about a simple hypothetical, John, and then preference.
You know the scale's only 1 to 7.
Yeah. Well, no, it's 0 to 7.
Okay. Here's something that I noticed, and it's a little off topic from what we were just talking about, but do you notice in movies there's like this trope where everything happens for a reason? Like, if somebody sneezes, that means that they're about to get a cold. No one sneezes out of the blue in a movie just because, you know, people sneeze.
Right.
Everything happens for a reason, for the most part.
Because the movie is trying to tell you a story.
Yes. So they'll use certain cues, a sneeze, a cough, or someone tripping.
Right. Like, oh, if someone does cough, if you see them coughing and sneezing a lot, you're like, oh, no, this is suddenly Tom Hanks' character from Philadelphia.
Yes.
Right.
Or someone bumps into a wall. Oh, they must be an alcoholic, or they must
they're
have...
They're very clumsy, or they have vertigo, or they have... Yeah.
Targetive dyskinesia, or whatever.
Something. There is a purpose for this happening, because
yes.
If they sneezed in a take and there's no message there, they would just reshoot the take, right?
Well, or if they decide to keep that, then the person watching the movie is going to say, why did they sneeze? And they're going to pay attention. They're trying to pick up other cues to suggest that this person actually is sick. So the reason I bring that up is I used to think that there should be random events in movies to make them seem more like real life. After watching The Room, I realized that was a terrible idea because The Room has a lot of
random
events.
So you think that Mike maybe has like a brittle bone disease, and so like that's why Greg was helping him back to his room after he fell on a pretty ordinary metal trash can?
I think that either they wanted there to be random events in the movie or random things happen because they're people and they decided to go with those takes.
I think, yeah. It's really bad. Or they shot like without getting permission from different people or whatever. Like the scene where Johnny is riding on the trolley is definitely like he paid for a seat on the trolley and is riding on it. Yeah. That's why like they had to shoot him probably in the doorway. As opposed
they probably
to,
didn't have a permit to shoot that. So
right, so they had to shoot from the
incognito.
Street with Johnny on the doorstep. So like,
which when you shoot scenes like that in public, you actually have to have a permit in most locales.
Oh, I'm sure that you could find their permit filed in the San Francisco court, blah, blah, blah.
It only cost $6 million.
Yeah, it was $4.5 million. It's a very expensive permit.
You know, so that's my takeaway is you should never have things happen randomly in a movie unless you're making a movie about real life, day-to-day life.
Right. If the if there's a scene in a bathroom where like a character is going to the bathroom, it better be like in Dumb and Dumber where Harry is pooping his guts out and everyone's
or,
having a bath.
There's Something About Mary where the guy zips up his Frank and Beans.
Right. So everything in a movie, and for no other reason than possibly like, hey, this is a movie that we need to produce, direct, and spend a lot of money on. We're not going to waste any money taking scenes that don't tell us anything or give the audience
exactly.
any information.
So that's why the scene where... Mike and Jenny or whatever, she gives him blowjob and he makes the weirdest looking faces imaginable.
Which might be the art for this. I really want that picture if I can find it, the right one.
Oh yeah, I already got it for you, I think.
Oh, fantastic, to be the featured image.
That will be the featured image for this this episode. But like that scene, I'm thinking like later on, like what relevance did the scene have? Where's that? How's it going to come full circle? It never did.
Well,
had no...
he tells an embarrassing story to Johnny about he forgot MeUndies is what he says. MeUnderwears.
That's a fine story to put in the movie if we didn't have to see it 10 minutes prior.
Well, And the only payout is the fact, yes, that he gets to tell Johnny an embarrassing story later.
Okay, so if some guy comes to me...
By the way, this movie gave me a t-shirt idea, and I would like to design this t-shirt. It'll probably be available for purchase. We'll get more information on that. But can you think of what the most recited line by all of the characters in this movie is? Maybe you heard it and it bothered you as much as it did me.
That everything's going to be all right, or...
Well, yeah, four words. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, don't worry about it.
So I think we're going to make a shirt. You know, here's the concept of the shirt that I have, so no one can rip this off because it's my intellectual property now. No, I don't know. But so the top part says, don't worry about it. And then there's like the four characters in the movie that's like, it's Johnny's character, kind of, but like not so much so you can tell it's Johnny's character that we could be sued, but enough that you know it's Johnny's character. And like a thought bubble that says, I think my girlfriend might be cheating on me. Lisa's mom, who has breast cancer, and she's thinking to herself, I definitely have breast cancer. Denny, who's like, I think I have a serious drug problem. And then Mark, I don't know what Mark's problem could possibly be, is like, I think my best friend's going to find out I'm cheating or I'm sleeping with his girlfriend. Or maybe we get a different character from the movie. Or, oh no, I forgot me undies or my underwears. And then at the bottom it says, be happy about it. So it says, don't worry about it, be happy about it.
Nice.
I think it's a really funny idea for sure.
So I want to do a little segment here where I tell you a story.
Don't worry about it.
I'll tell you a story about something that I did.
Well, okay. Can I throw in a bonus seventh question real quick?
All right, real quick. And then I'm going to tell you my story.
And I think it can be as simple as a one-word answer. Do you think that Johnny's friend is a good psychologist? The advice that he gives Johnny. Do you think he's a good psychologist?
Refresh my memory. Gosh, what he says something like women be crazy.
Well, right? One thing that I know he says is, well, I don't know, people are people. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about
it.
No.
People are just people.
I'm not going to say I've seen my share of psychologists, but if I had, I would definitely tell you. They don't tell you don't worry about it. They tell you
not to worry. Why do you think this is important to you?
Be anxious, but here's how to deal with your problem.
Right. A little more general than people are people.
But
or a little less general than that.
I wanted to tell you a story, and I want to gauge what your reaction is.
Okay.
So I went to your house in a near bedroom. And I brought a box of chocolates with me, and I went with my girlfriend. I went with my wife. I'll say that because I'm married. And we fed each other chocolates on your bed. And then I received oral sex from my wife. And then your mother-in-law walked in, and she caught us as we were getting dressed. And then she found my underwear. What's your reaction to that story?
That is a really boring story. I don't care. Also, why did you break into my house?
Yeah, so like, there's a lot of questions you might have.
Well, okay.
Like, so, why would you have sex with your wife in my house? And why would you break into my house?
There seems to be, yeah, okay, so because they didn't want to build another set is the answer I know. But there's a lot of questions that come up from, like, why are people doing what they're doing?
Yeah, when they what come was Tommy's reaction?
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. That's funny.
That's so funny, Mike.
You had sex with your girlfriend on my bed, and my mother-in-law walked in.
Oh, your bare ass cheeks were on my leather sofa. That's so funny.
Yeah, no, I would be pretty pissed.
It wasn't on the bed. It was on the leather sofa.
Oh, that's right. Downstairs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But still, like, that's his couch. You don't want your friends to be copulating on your furniture.
Right.
That's gross. That's not a funny story. That's disgusting.
So anyway, yeah, like, I was riding your bare back like a whatever. Anyway, yeah. Apparently, though, that's something that Johnny's character is pretty open about, is him and his friend's sexual relationship.
True. So open that he's more than happy to, I don't know, let his friends do their business at his house and even let the neighbor kid watch a little foreplay.
Would it bother me? Yes.
And by the way, if the neighbor kid hops on my bed while I'm in the middle of foreplay, you better believe I'm jumping off that bed. What are you doing?
Yeah, well, like, if nothing else, if you can provide a really good context as to why you were in my house doing that, then I'm less mad at you for certain.
Yeah.
But, like, I presume that either Mike or Mike's girlfriend has an apartment. And actually, I know based on this that even if it's the same apartment shot from the other direction, from a different camera angle, like definitely...
Or just in a mirrored lens.
Right, definitely Jenny has, or I think her name is, let's call her Jenny, has an apartment. So why not take Mike there? Or why is Mike taking her to Tommy's or Johnny's apartment?
How does Mike have a key? Like, we haven't really established how he's friends with Johnny, so who knows?
I don't know. A lot of
I just thought that was weird.
A big question that no one knows about this movie is, why is it called The Room? And in your opinion, why is this movie called The Room?
Because it was shot in one room.
That's as good a guess as any, is that, yeah, most of this movie takes place in one room.
One boring, small room. It looks like a soap opera set.
Right.
Or soon-to-be-retired soap opera set.
You should see what Tommy Wiseau says as to why the movie is called The Room later on. Maybe we can leave a link to it on the page. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I couldn't figure out a reason. But I guess if I had to find a reason this movie is called The Room, it's because what else do you call it? Don't worry about it.
Bad times in San Francisco. Don't worry, be happy.
Oh, I didn't recognize it was you.
I did not hit her.
I did not hit her would be a good title for this movie. So yeah, I think that's the alternate title is I did not hit her. I did not. It's bullshit. I did not. But that probably didn't fit very well on a marquee, so.
No. General profanity doesn't work out so well on a marquee.
Nah.
Or a movie box. Or direct to DVD.
You know, in order to bring this together with our other podcast, EnlightenedGamer.com, or Enlightened Gamer, we have a new rating system, which is units of love. And
0 to 100.
0 to 100 or 0 to negative 100.
Well, no, we do units of love and then units of hate.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It dips into one of the two.
I thought you had to give two ratings.
Well, I don't think you can. You know what? You can. I'll allow it.
Okay.
You have special permissions from me, especially on this episode. Give it how many units of love and how many units of hate?
I can't give it 0 units of love because there were parts of the movie that made me laugh, and it made me laugh despite the movie, but nonetheless, it was enjoyable at some point. Just a few points. The terrible acting, the way that Tommy Wiseau takes himself so seriously, but at the same time does a terrible job of taking himself seriously. I would give it about 15 units of love.
I would say that my rating of this movie is completely conditional, because I think it's a great movie if you're watching it with a group of friends or people who have never seen it before. And if that's the case, then I love it, because it turns into the perfect movie to make fun of or watch with other people and see what their reactions are. Even it's like those things on YouTube where they're like, oh, old people react to or young people react to.
True.
It's like my friends react to The Room. So if that's the context in which I'm watching this movie, like if that's the framework, I would say 90 units of love.
Okay.
And alternatively, if it's me watching this movie alone by myself for some reason, negative 90 units of love. So it's, or, you know, 90 units of hate, I guess. So okay. I guess there you have it. For me, it's a very, like, it's a great movie if in the right setting. One of, like, its biggest proponents, I think, is Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd watches this movie a lot because they still have screenings of it in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
And so he...
People dress up as different characters.
He and, like, Amy Poehler and a lot of people you can see in Wet Hot American Summer or the Wet Hot American Summer version of the show that's on Netflix now. I forget what it's called.
The golf course.
First Day of Summer.
Is it the Amazon Prime?
No. It's Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Summer, I think.
Oh, okay.
And... Yeah, so a lot of those people, I think, in that group of friends all really enjoy this movie and kind of go to it routinely. But
okay.
Yeah, it's not the kind of movie you're like, well, if I watched it by myself and I have to give it a review, I think it's a really good movie.
No, it's terrible. And I don't really have any desire to watch it again by myself, but I would with friends. And I would go to a screening, and actually you and I are going to go to the Mystery Science, or no, the Riff Tracks Live.
Yeah, I think it's what, coming up
January
here at the end
24th.
Of the month. 24th or 28th? I thought it was the 28th.
One of those two.
I think the 14th, they're having a different movie, but they're doing a couple different Riff Tracks movies here at the local theaters.
And I would love to watch that.
Yeah, I would have no problem at all going to, The Room.
So, but if you haven't seen it, watch it. watch it with some friends. It's a lot better than watching it by yourself. If you can, go to www.rifftracks.com. Give those guys a few bucks and listen with their commentary.
Yeah, and you know what?
It's phenomenal.
If you don't get a chance to watch this movie, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
All right, anything else to be said about this film?
There is absolutely nothing else to be said about this movie. let's lay it to rest.
Yeah, forever here.
Forever certainly. And ever. Until we need another laugh.
Until The Room 2 comes out.
Well, until then. Actually, until our next episode.
All right. Bye, Mark.
Bye, Lisa.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening.
I'd like to give a special thanks to Ron Jenkins for allowing the use of his music. It's all from the album Disorganized Fun, which can be found on iTunes. Thanks again, Ron.